Today, the Fed's nasty surprise. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news. Well, the Fed lifted the target rate, as expected, to 5 to 5.25% yesterday, bang in line with market expectations, and bringing it to exactly the same level of the plateau that it spent 15 months before the global financial crisis back in 2007. And as normal, I listened to the press conference. The language in the accompanying statement withdrew its previous predictions that further rate hikes would follow. A pause is thus likely, and it also declined to offer any hints that cuts were imminent. So you could say that this was a hawkish pause. The succession of regional bank failures in the last 2 months raised the possibility that the Fed would be forced to pivot towards lower rates, hoping that those problems would have done their inflation fighting for them. And in fact, the key passage on that went like this.
Afternoon. Before discussing today's meeting, let me comment briefly on recent developments in the banking sector. Conditions in that sector have broadly improved since early March, and the U.S. banking system is sound and resilient. We will continue to monitor conditions in the sector. We're committed to learning the right lessons from this episode, and will work to prevent events like these from happening again. As a first step in that process, last week we released Vice Chair for Supervision Barr's review of the Federal Reserve's supervision and regulation of Silicon Valley Bank. The review's findings underscore the need to address our rules and supervisory practices to make for a stronger and more resilient banking system, and I'm confident that we will do so. Today, the FOMC raised its policy interest rate by a quarter percentage point. Since early last year, we've raised interest rates by a total of 5 percentage points in order to attain a stance of monetary policy that is sufficiently restrictive to return inflation to 2% over time. We are also continuing to reduce our securities holdings. Looking ahead, we'll take a data-dependent approach in determining the extent to which additional policy firming may be appropriate.
The U.S. banking system is sound and resilient. Tighter credit conditions for households and businesses are likely to weigh on economic activity, hiring, and inflation. The extent of these effects remain uncertain. The committee remains highly attentive to inflation risks. So, for the first 30 minutes, there were really no surprises. Markets hardly moved. But something changed halfway through the press conference. Powell lost control of the narrative. The markets shifted, and half an hour or so after the markets closed, then the news also came that another regional bank was, quote, reviewing its strategic options. That's code for admitting that it was in terrible trouble. The fact that the Fed, who's responsible for banking regulation, had to say in so many words that banks were, quote, sound and resilient, is actually not good news. And at least the entire committee could agree on that one. And indeed, they also agreed on everything, despite the many pressures and the intensity of debate over monetary policy. Powell managed again to steer the FOMC to a decision with no dissents. But he got into trouble when answering questions about exactly what would prompt cuts. He was trying to hold the line that the markets shouldn't price them in, saying that in the world the Fed envisaged, there wouldn't be a case for easing this year. Unfortunately, he also introduced the idea that others may have different opinions about the economy, and if they were right, then the Fed would have to loosen rates.
Now you have a labor market that's still extraordinarily tight. You've still got 1.6 job openings, even with the lower job openings number, for every unemployed person. We do see some evidence of softening in labor market conditions, but overall, you're near a 50-year low in unemployment. Wages, you all will have seen the wage number from late last week, and it's, you know, whenever it was, and you know, it's a couple percentage points above what would be consistent with 2% inflation over time. So we do see some softening. We see new labor supply coming in. These are very positive developments. But the labor market is very, very strong, whereas inflation is, you know, running high, well above our goal. And right now we need to be focusing on bringing inflation down. Fortunately, we've been able to do that so far without unemployment going up.
Hi, Chair Powell. Matthew Bosler with Bloomberg News. So many analysts noted at the time of the March FOMC meeting that at least half of Fed officials' projections did imply or seem to imply that a recession was in their baseline forecast as well, given the strong first quarter GDP tracking estimates. And so I'm just wondering if you could kind of elaborate on, you know, why you're optimistic that a recession can be avoided, given that that's the Fed staff's forecast, possibly also the broader committee's forecast as well, and also, of course, most private sector forecasters.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, I know what's printed in the Summary of Economic Projections and all that. I don't think you can deduce exactly what you said about what participants think, because you don't know what they were thinking for first quarter GDP at that point. They could have been thinking about a fairly low number anyway. In any case, I'll just say I continue to think that it's possible that this time is really different. And the reason is there's just so much excess demand, really, in the labor market. It's interesting, as you know, we've raised rates by 5 percentage points in 14 months, and the unemployment rate is 3.5%, pretty much where it was, even lower than where it was when we started. So job openings are still very, very high. We see by surveys and much evidence that conditions are cooling gradually, but it really is different. You know, it wasn't supposed to be possible for job openings to decline by as much as they've declined without unemployment going up. Well, that's what we've seen. So there are no promises in this, but it just seems that to me that it's possible that we can continue to have a cooling in the labor market without having the big increases in unemployment that have gone with many, you know, prior episodes. Now, that would be against history. I fully appreciate that. That would be against the pattern. But I do think that the situation in the labor market with so much excess demand, yet, you know, wages have been moving down. Wage increases have been moving down. And that's a good sign, down to more sustainable levels. So I think it's still possible. I think, you know, the case of avoiding a recession is, in my view, more likely than that of having a recession. But it's not that the case of having a recession is, I don't rule that out either. It's possible that we will have what I hope would be a mild recession.
The committee also noted in March that wage growth was still well above levels that would be consistent with 2% inflation. Do you see that as well? And could you kind of explain, you know, how you come to that judgment?
Sure. So we look at a range of wage measures, and then, you know, that's a nominal. And then so you assume wages should be equal to productivity increases plus inflation. And so you can look at, you know, the Employment Compensation Index, average hourly earnings, the Atlanta Wage Tracker, compensation per hour, basically those four and many others, and you can look at what they would have to run at over a long period of time for that to be consistent with 2% inflation. They can deviate. You know, corporate margins can go up and down, and there is a feature of long expansions where they do go down, where labor gets a bigger share toward later in a recession. Later in an expansion. So, yeah, those, you know, and we calculate those, and you have to take the precision with a degree of salt. But I would say that what they will show is that, you know, if wages are running at 5%, 3% is closer to where they need to be. Wage increases and closer to 3%, roughly, is what it would take to be consistent with inflation over a longer period of time. I do not think that wages are the principal driver of inflation. You're asking me a very specific question. I think there are many things. I think wages and prices tend to move together, and it's very hard to say what's causing what. But I've never said that, you know, that wages are really the principal driver, because I don't think that's really right.
Great. Chris Rugaber at Associated Press. Well, you mentioned profit margins. Those have expanded, did expand sharply during this inflationary period. And while there are some signs that they are starting to decline, many economists note they haven't fallen as much as might be expected, given that we're seeing at least some pullback among consumer spending. So speaking of causes of inflation, do you see expanded profit margins as a driver of higher prices? And if so, would you expect them to narrow soon and contribute to reduced inflation in the coming months?
So higher profits and higher margins are what happens when you have an imbalance between supply and demand. Too much demand, not enough supply. And we've been in a situation in many parts of the economy where supply has been fixed or not flexible enough. And so, you know, the way the market clears is through higher prices. So to get, I think, as goods pipelines have gotten, back to normal so that we don't have the long waits and the shortages and that kind of thing, I think you will see inflation come down, and you'll see corporate margins coming down as a result of a return of full competition where there's enough supply to meet demand, and then you're really back to full competition. That would be the dynamic I would expect.
Now, Wall Street took this point as a need to brace for a recession. And so this was an invitation to bet on a big reversal. Bond yields plunged. And in fact, the Fed funds rate is 25 basis points lower today than it had been forecast 2 months ago. And meanwhile, by January, the bet is now that it will be below 4%. This was obviously meant to be a hawkish pause, but by the time he sat down, markets decided he had announced a pivot. The Fed may have brought the Fed funds rate up to its peak under Bernanke 15 years ago, but the inflation genie has escaped the bottle now, and judging how restrictive rates are required, some complex decisions about how to account for inflation and future inflation is more important than the current inflation number. It's all a mess, and it's all unknown. Now, interestingly, Powell offered a new version of what the real rate of interest actually is, which was to subtract the current market break-even prediction for inflation over the next year from the Fed funds rate. And on that basis, real yields are as high as they've been since the GFC, with the sole exception of December 2018, when there was that infamous Christmas Eve sell-off that forced the Fed into what became known as the Powell pivot, as it retreated from plans to keep tightening. The Powell measure is the only one that showed that rates had suddenly grown very tight at the end of 2018. So Powell's choice of metric could be seen as self-defense in showing that the Fed was no longer too lenient. And it could also be taken as a hint that they were done with tightening. But the combination is pretty unconvincing. Listen to this. I still believe that banking and tech plus inventories will be enough to create a modest recession mid-year. And there are sufficient weakening trends to support my view. Still, one can't ignore that the rest of the economy, where traditional real estate metrics matter, a 5.25% funds rate against a 4.6% core PCE inflation rate year on year, and a 4.9% quarter on quarter, is not close to sufficiently tight. Powell says no recession, but inflation still gets back to 2% over time. That's according to Stephen Blitz, the US economist at TS Lombard. So if the market is right about this, the consequences aren't pretty. Powell concedes that if the Fed is wrong about the economy, rates will come down. And the Fed still says the economy will muddle through without a recession. That might explain why a big drop in bond yields was unusually accompanied by a difficult session for equities. Chairman Powell's message remains sobering. The Fed's policy rate will only come down with a greater economic slowdown or credit crunch from tightening bank lending standards. The equity market has faded in the wake of Chairman Powell's press conference. The market may be realizing that there's a fine line between getting the rate cut it wants and maintaining an economic trajectory that doesn't involve buyer's remorse. A classic case of be careful what you wish for, says Yung Wang of BMO Wealth Management. The entire FOMC took place against the subplot of the regional banking crisis, as at 2 p.m., when the decision was announced, the S&P 1500 Regional Banks Index had put on a pretty credible rally, although it's still well down from over the past year. But after Powell's comments about the Fed's record of banking supervision of late, which it admits has been nowhere near good enough, plus his denials that he wanted to promote more consolidation in the sector, together these were taken as lacking sufficient grasp of the gravity of the situation. And then after the market closed, PacWest Bancorp announced that it was examining strategic options, including a possible sale. Traders didn't like that. Now, given that the bank's great problem has been high bond yields, and the reaction to Powell was to send yields down, this does suggest a horrible lack of confidence. While PacWest has never been worth more than, say, $7 billion US dollars, it's worth around $770 million now. First Republic topped out at $40 billion, and it's still worth about $3 billion when its endgame started last week. So this is nowhere near as big or important a bank as SVB Financial Group or First Republic. As its shares didn't go badly during the day, it does look as though news of its problems came as a blindside and had nothing to do with the big sell-off during the Powell press conference. But unfortunately, news that another bank is in trouble does serve as confirmation that the problem is still around. The drumbeat for a rapid expansion in deposit insurance will only grow louder. And next Monday brings the Fed's quarterly survey of lending officers, which Powell did a somewhat confusing job of previewing at the press conference, and which is now set up to be a critical data point. And by the way, the European Central Bank today will be interesting given the strong levels of core inflation there in the Eurozone, so we should expect higher interest rates there too. Things are, as they say, very, very interesting and continue to be so at the moment. And nobody's quite sure what's happening next. Risk of recession in the US seems to me to be ever stronger. The regional banking crisis hadn't gone away. And as to whether the Fed is competent, well, I'll let others judge. But to me, questions need to be asked. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.